Älskar du den här podden? Stötta den genom IKAs nya supporterfunktion. Det är helt upp till dig hur mycket du vill bidra med och det finns ingen bindningstid. Klicka på länken i poddbeskrivningen för att visa din uppskattning och stötta podden.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to this episode of Odd Job Comedy Podcast, and this is our first English episode, actually, all English, maybe there will be some Swedish also, we don't know yet. We have a special guest star this episode with us is Jonathan Rollins.
Hey!
Yay!
Thanks for having
me.
Famous stand-up comedian and lots of other things, I guess. Jonathan, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, you're nervous?
Very. No, not at all.
We are.
Yeah. Oh, it shouldn't be.
You're in good hands. As we're recording this at the Nordic Heart Center, we're all in good hands, if anything.
Yeah. In case you're going to have a heart attack, it's a very good time to have it now.
Yeah.
You can get discount.
Discount.
We had a former guest, Atto Carlson. He was the first guest that actually asked about if someone has died in this place.
Yeah.
Because it's a heart center.
Yeah. And since it's Halloween,
yeah.
No one did.
A bit too late, but I mean, if it's four of us, so if we have a massive heart infarct, four, then we can have take four, pay for one, like, you know.
Oh, okay. So
can you cure like heartbreaks as well?
If you're heartbroken? Heartbroken. That's my specialty.
That's your specialty. Oh, okay.
You could have a session with me.
You know, I got a new watch, a Fitbit Charge 3. It's really, I love it, and it takes my pulse all the time. So I know what pulse I have.
What pulse do you have now?
Sorry.
What is it now?
Now it's 75. It's pretty high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it because we just started recording?
Yeah, I think so. I'm getting a bit nervous. So it's the energy.
It's not negative energy though, so it's good.
No, it's positive.
Yeah,
so it's I got a positive heart rate of 75 right now.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
And having a higher rate, is it like it could be because you're fit or no?
No, you're supposed to have a low heart rate, I guess, when you're
resting. Yeah.
So what do you call it? A resting pulse? Or?
Resting heart rate.
Yeah.
Resting pulse.
So that mine is down to 48 or something when I'm resting. And that's supposedly pretty good for an old man like me.
You know, you should borrow us later to see what we have. Like, yeah.
You have better you have better equipment than this?
No, because
this cost me 1,500 crowns.
I compete all the time.
Okay.
The highest rate.
Yeah. But you don't want to have a high rate. You want to have a low rate. But then when you're working out, you want to have a high, you know. So that's, I don't know. We can compare later on. Anyways, this episode was not about the Nordic Heart Center and my pulse.
It could be if you want to.
It's not a mind. Here. I came here to talk about heart rate.
That's what I told you. Jonathan, you want to come and guest our podcast? We're going to talk about heart rate. Yeah, that's fun. That's going to be interesting. Or not. We're going to talk about sliding doors or coincidences in life where something happens and you're all of a sudden in another place than you thought you would be in. So that's the topic for today. it's going to be interesting to see what we can find out. Robin, do you have any reflections on that topic?
I've written down vegetarian, 16 years old, and dreadlocks.
Oh!
That's what I've written down.
Looking at you, Robin, I'm not thinking dreadlocks, actually. No. That's not my first, thought that comes to my head.
When did you get dreadlocks?
When I was the age of 16, I think.
Okay.
I had them for like 9 years.
So you were vegetarian and you had dreadlocks at the same time?
The stereotype, the typical stereotype.
Yeah.
And I had shoes made of hemp.
Oh, like, really?
These vegan shoes. And
oh, cool. You were that far into that?
Oh, man.
Okay.
You were that guy.
I was that guy.
Connected to what?
Music.
What kind of music?
Reggae music,
of course. It is.
Swedish hip hop.
Yeah.
Like Loop Troop.
Yeah.
Being anti-everything.
Yeah, I used to love Loop Troop.
Yeah, you used to.
Yeah, I still do actually, but I mean they're not still around, are they?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Mm.
Oh, good.
No, but I guess that was nowadays vegetarians and veganism is like this hipster kind of urban kind of thing that everybody is trying to approach. But for me, I think I got so many questions about it, and everybody was trying to like, I need to, every time they asked me what I was eating and why I choose to eat the way I eat, people ask me so many questions. And I mean, it's not like a big deal, but I was a vegetarian for maybe 15-17 years.
That's a long time.
So I stopped now and become trendy.
Yeah, you're not a vegan anymore.
No.
So what happened? Why? Why did you stop?
I don't know. My girlfriend kind of convinced me. She cooked a good meal.
Oh.
No, but I don't know. I don't know really because I don't know really.
So it wasn't principle based, or was it principle?
Kind of. To be honest.
Was it Rastafari? Was it?
I was trying to like put it in that path.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
I'm believing in Haile Selassie and
Selassie.
I'm gonna be
first,
like only living
Aital.
Yeah. But actually, when I met my ex, like several years ago, and she was a vegan by the time, so I think that she kind of influenced me. I say influence because it's easier.
Yeah.
But that was like a choice that I did. That kind of changed a lot for me. Mm.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So you think meeting her was the sliding door, or being the vegetarian was the sliding door? What do you think was the one thing that made change the course of how you were your life?
I guess both, because I think when I met her, I think that was the first time that I actually got in love, like for real. That really felt like I was in love with someone, and that I actually felt. I can honestly say to a person that I love the person as a partner. So maybe meeting her, and I guess I chose to be a vegetarian because of her, because I wanted so much to fit in to be that kind of person that she wanted to, which in the end maybe made us go separate ways, I guess.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Maybe because you tried really hard to be the person
to
she wanted you to
adjust,
be.
To adjust to her, like, visions.
Well, what would your life be if you hadn't met her?
That's a good question. Nobody knows, really. Who knows?
But what impacts did it have on your life? I mean, besides trying to be the person she wanted you to be.
I've been talking about this in some former episode of this podcast because I had a friend that died.
That's right.
And I had one of my closest friends, he died. And that girl, the vegetarian girl, the vegan girl, she was living in at the West Coast in Sweden, and I was living in Stockholm. We had like a distant relationship for almost 2 years.
Okay.
But then when he died, she moved to Stockholm. So I was still living at my mom's place back then. So that changed a lot, I guess.
And then you had dreadlocks already?
I had dreadlocks, yeah.
And I had Rastafletor.
You had, yeah.
Yeah, but you saw the picture, yeah.
I did, actually. That was one. I was surrounded by two dreadlocked people.
And you were the only half Jamaican.
I know. I'm the only half Jamaican. My brother, he still got dreadlocks, actually. Yeah. That's, you know, dad hates dreadlocks. That's the worst thing. He's like...
So the only Jamaican in the family hates dreadlocks.
I have a younger brother with dreadlocks, and when he came home with dreadlocks, that was like, oh my God, he hated that. This is the one thing I didn't want for my sons. Yeah, he didn't like that. All right, but Robin, did that impact on work, or did you choose different lifestyle altogether?
Like say the dreadlocks, for instance. Mm-hmm. I mean, you were stopped by the police like all the time
because
they were like they searched you for drugs and asking questions, and you got kind of harassed. But I guess that's a part of like if you had that kind of outfit, it's a part of it, I guess.
That's cool.
But did you experiment with drugs then?
No. That was like the ironic part, that the police was stopping you all the time. But I mean, of course, I was drinking like alcohol, but not even that much.
No.
But it was only because of the dreadlocks.
And
I know like people, because I was waiting at a restaurant by the time when I cut them off the dreadlocks, and I could tell like the difference. The attitude from the guest was totally from one day to another. They started to treat you totally different, and just because of the hair.
Wow,
that's another sliding door.
Yeah,
because if you kept the dreadlocks, you might not be a different.
Because it was the same person.
Yeah.
I was the same person.
Mm.
So,
yeah, we're pretty quick to judge, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, what about you, Jonathan?
Me, my sliding door. So many things. I think one of the ones I could think of right away is impacted my life a lot was I'm from a ghetto part of Miami, but I had very sheltering parents. Both of my parents are in the army, and they made sure I went to quote unquote good schools and stuff like that to keep me away from those elements that are around and where I'm from. And when I became an adult. Or like straight out of high school, I went to the Air Force.
Okay.
And I joined Air Force for, I was in Air Force for 6 years.
Where at?
My first base. Well, first you go to basic training in Texas.
Okay.
And then I went to, my first base was, well first, and then I went to training school to learn my trade. I was an air traffic controller. So I learned that in school and then in Mississippi. And then I went to Alaska for 3 years.
Wow.
I went to Turkey. Then I went to, and I deployed from Alaska. I went to Oman. Then I went to Iraq from Turkey. Then I went to North Carolina and did it, finished my time. But I think that shaped my life a lot, going to the military. That's something that I'd be a different person.
Yeah.
Even the air traffic thing, because I'm from Miami, I had an accent. I talked in that it's a southern draw, but then it's kind of a mumble, and they talk fast. So,
oh, really?
It's if you're talking to my uncle, he'll just be like, "Hey man, what's going on with you?"
Oh, really?
And people like, "What?" my uncle came to visit me here, and my friends are like, "What?" And he came on my podcast actually, and I told him before, like, "Hey man, you gotta talk a little slower," and he did. He spoke a little more clearly, so that people could understand him. But that was one thing I had to learn. You can't talk to pilots like that.
That's right. That would be...
So they were like, nobody knows what you're saying. Mm. You have to... And you have to talk fast in the career because it's a lot of planes everywhere. Mm. So I had to learn how to almost relearn how to talk.
Okay.
And that's something that... so many things shaped. Joining the Air Force shaped me in so many ways. I can't even count it. I'm a completely different person. It made me have a view of authority in a positive way.
Yeah.
It taught me how to be a leader.
Mm-hmm.
It taught me how to disagree with people that are above you, but still carry out their vision.
Yeah.
I got to travel more. Mm-hmm. I met my wife. I wouldn't have met her if I didn't. I met her in Turkey.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm. So I
wouldn't. She on vacation or?
She was on vacation. I was on vacation. I had just gotten back from Iraq.
Oh,
so
okay. Oh.
They let me go on 2 weeks rest and relaxation.
Oh, cool. And, staying at the base, though, or?
Well, when you do that, you can, they do trips every holiday.
Oh, okay.
So in Turkey.
Oh, really?
All around Turkey. So they they did a trip to Alanya from the military base. So basically a bunch of troops. It's probably annoying for the people in Alanya. Here we go again. It's crazy drunk, drunk soldiers.
50 soldiers coming out of that. What's your point
here? You guys don't have Budweiser, man? It's like, come on, man. Embarrassing us all. No, but I'm sure it brought money into those party towns too, so they probably like that. But still, you got to take the good with the bad.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have met her either, you know. So I'm really glad. I don't know what I would have been. I'm sure I would have been okay.
Yeah,
my parents, my mother instilled a lot of strong values, I believe. But it would have been a completely different path if I'd have joined.
Yeah. I can imagine living or working under a military organization must be very special. I myself have a problem with authorities sometimes or lots of times. And you know, the discipline and everything. I'm like, no, I'm going to tell you what to do. You're not going to tell me what to do. And that's not really good, I guess, if you're in the military.
Yeah. So, I thought I was a tough guy.
Took me a long time to learn how to adjust. And that.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. I thought about that when I got out. And I went into the civilian world.
Yeah.
And I didn't do air traffic control. I was like, I'm not gonna do that. And then I went to the corporate world.
Yeah.
And in the U.S., you get more like they consider it equivalent to a bachelor's degree if you have military service. Mm. Like, that's you get the same. You can make it to an interview. You know what I mean? You still have to pass the interview and all that stuff.
It's a good position too.
But they respect it. All of my colleagues were all college graduates, but they weren't ready for life.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
These are
I was 24. They were 20, around that, 23, 24. But they were, I had been living as an adult, taking care of my responsibilities for the last 6 years.
Yeah.
And they were just like, just out of college.
Yeah. We know what college is like. Right?
So I was surpassing all of my colleagues because I knew how to, you know,
Because of the discipline and and everything.
Yeah, so it helped me so much. Even though I think I would have been okay.
Was that a coincidence that made you to begin even, or was it something that you wanted to do since you were a little kid?
No, definitely not. I wanted as a kid, I wanted to be a Disney artist. I wanted to draw the Disney cartoon.
Oh, okay.
That moved into being an architect. I wanted to do that. Something with art, you know. I wanted to do something like that.
You good at that?
Yeah, I was. I was pretty good.
Cool. Are you still like drawing and doing?
Nah, I guess I doodle every now and then, but nah, I stopped. I still can, but I stopped. Mm-hmm. Then as I got a little older, I wanted to get in theater. I did like music, stuff like that. I was in the arts. I was always into the arts.
Yeah.
And then once I got close to graduating, I had troubles with my mom, so I moved out, and I lived with my uncle, and he was, I thought it was going to be so fun, he's my cool uncle, and then he was really tough on me, because it's just like a little bit of, maybe it's an American thing, it's like a little bit of stress to be an adult when you're 18, to be, have your own place and all that stuff, and ready, start your life.
Yeah.
And he was like, you going to college? I was like, no, I'm not going to college. And he's like, you got to do something.
Yeah,
and I was like, I want to be an artist. And he was like, artists don't make money until they die. What you gonna do? I was like, no, man. I'm 18, man. So I moved back to my mom. I signed up for the military and then moved to my mom just so I can go and start and figure it out.
Yeah.
And then the Air Force, they had the whole thing, we'll pay for your college.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good part.
So I was like, all right, I'll do that. I'll learn something. And my cousin was an air traffic controller, so I was like, I'm going to do what he does.
Air traffic control, that's a pretty cool job, though.
Yeah, it was cool. It's fun. I get the same rush on stage.
Because you can't sleep, you can't, you know, you have to pay attention all the time, right?
Of course.
You see plays start dropping. Oh, Jonathan, he's in his Florida accent again.
But if you would go back in time, would you do it again?
I think if I could go back in time, I would start doing stand-up right away.
Oh, okay. So not going the military way, rather the artistic way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I would do that right away. Yeah. I would have love to learn, even though I think I wouldn't have come I wouldn't be where I'm at. I've been doing comedy for 3 years. I don't think I would be as comfortable on stage if I would have started younger.
No.
I think me being older and starting a few years ago made it where I know myself. I know what I think is funny. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to figure all of that out while learning how to be an adult. So I think it helped my comedy waiting, but I would have loved to try it right away. Because it would have been cool.
Yeah.
But at the time in the military, has it helped you within your stand-up, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I got to meet so many different types of people. Because if I would have started in Miami, I think I would have been very Miami. You know what I mean? I would have been very specific about with my viewpoint. I didn't get to travel as much. And like my best friend...
More like narrow-minded? Or
yeah, more narrow-minded. Because my best friend when I was in the military was a white dude from Virginia. You know what I mean? I would have never... Got, and then I met him and his family and you know stuff like that. I would have never gotten to meet him and get to know him. I would have never gotten to travel. I don't think I would have traveled as much. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have because it costs money to travel. And... you know, I did a Euro trip while I was in, you know, it's like stuff like that. I wouldn't have known anything. So
where did you go?
You know, Americans, we'd go to every city for like a day. And I traveled all over. I've been 15 countries. Yeah. I did that whole thing. Like started in Spain and then, you know, I started in Spain and I kind of went up through Europe.
Okay.
And then I made my final destination Sweden so I could try to live here. Back then in 06. So that's what I did.
Was that before you met your wife?
I had met her.
Yeah, okay.
So
okay. So the real reason for you coming to doing the European tour was actually to meet
up. It was the conclusion of my military service.
Yeah.
As my last thing I did was fly a military flight for $1 over to Spain. That saved me a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then make my way up to Sweden.
Yeah.
And then stay with her, see what this Swedish girl is all about.
Are you still here?
No, we moved back.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we lived in the States for six years. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first time you came to Sweden was 06.
Yeah. And then I moved away, and then we lived in the States. That was another thing. What if I wouldn't have left Sweden?
Yeah.
All of, so many sliding doors. My life is full of just a bunch of sliding doors. I kind of go on a whim, like, see what, let's try it. So.
But when you moved from Sweden back to the States, where did you live in the States? Did you move back to Florida?
No. I think that's another thing. If we would have moved to Florida, I don't know if we would have come back here.
No.
But my wife got a taste of that in Miami.
Yeah.
She'd have been like, and my whole family's there. You know what I mean? We lived in Jersey, and it's like,
okay, Jersey's.
It wasn't my family wasn't there like that, so it was like where I was only about my job.
Yeah, and Jersey's got winters, and it's not that.
Yeah, it has winter. It's not like this, like here. It's not as dark as here, but that doesn't bother me as much as it does her. But so it was. That's another sliding door.
Yeah,
in Jersey.
I got family, cousins in Vero Beach, Florida. They love it there. Moved from Sweden. Back in 75.
That's got to be quite unusual, though. Like during the 70s, moved from Sweden to Florida.
Yeah, that wasn't that usual. I mean, I remember them moving there. And I was like, oh, Florida, they got Disney World.
How old were you then?
I was 10 years old, 75. So I was so envious of them.
Because you were still in Gävle.
I was still in fucking They were sun-kissed in Florida, and I was in Gävle. That was fun, though. That was nice.
What about you, Nagma?
Me? Yeah, if I want to say what I think about sliding doors in general, I love sliding doors. I have great respect for them, and I have a very great respect for slump and coincidence. I think my life is mainly shaped of them. Like, you grow up learning that you have to do this education, you have to have these values, but I think we are mostly formed by coincidence and sliding doors, and I firmly believe that they are on my side. Like, yeah, whenever something happens, even though if it's an accident, when I go back to it, I firmly believe that it happens for the, happened for the reason, because I had something very important to learn from it. One of the greatest and worst sliding doors in my life, it was the boyfriend that I told you in earlier episode. When I was 18, I moved Budi Hoop.
Lived together with
the boy that was a very destructive relationship, mainly because he was very jealous and he was quite aggressive in a verbal way. But when I look back at it, I see that I learned a lot from it. For the first, I could be verbally aggressive myself. And when I, whenever in a discussion I lost my temper and raised my voice, I felt that other people are quiet because they have a great respect for me. But when he did it, it was my only way to see what an idiot, like, why don't you use words? Is it something wrong with your vocabulary? And that learned me a lot. So that is the sliding door that was that I went through. It was a bad experience, but I don't want to erase it from my life.
How long were you together?
1 year.
1 year.
Okay. Yeah, and he actually dumped me because he was very fit. He did lots of sport, and by that time I was fat, so he dumped me. And I think that's the other most important sliding door in my life, because he did it. I didn't have any control of it.
Okay.
I would have stayed if he didn't dump me. And when I look back, I think, oh my God, thanks for that sliding door. Mm. If I see him at the street, I would say, oh, thank you.
Good like thing I ate all that food.
That's the best thing.
Yes, I ate that McDonald's.
Every day I had cake and finally he dumped me.
Yeah.
So you're actually grateful for that, for him dumping you.
Yeah.
In hindsight.
Yeah, yes, right. Yes.
I was going to say, at the time, was it sad when he broke up
with you? Yes, I was heartbroken, and I was very much in love. Mm-hmm. And you know, in this, when you are in an abusive relationship, your self-esteem can be so low that you think, I was in love. That I'm not going to discuss. I was in love, but I was very dependent on him because he had bullied me so much that I felt like nobody, if he leave me, nobody can want me. Mm-hmm. So I was in love and very scared of being alone. Mm. So definitely I would be with him if he hadn't dumped me.
Yeah.
So when he dumped me, my self-esteem was so low that I didn't want to go out. I didn't want to go clubbing. And I had a friend who came over and forced me.
Mm.
That's the other, another sliding door. And that's where I met Mortiesa.
Oh.
Yeah.
When you went out with his friend.
Yeah, when we went clubbing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So if she didn't force me, I wouldn't have met him. So when I look at back, it's loads of these stories you have in your life.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm happy where the result is where I am standing now, I wouldn't change anything because I wouldn't stay here now.
No. So you accepted it and you moved on.
Not only accepted it, I feel like these coincidences are on my side, maybe because I believe it like this. Yeah, I think unconsciously, these sliding doors, there are lots of them. But which one you slide through, you make a choice, even if you're not conscious about it.
Mm. Yeah. Interesting.
Mm. Are there any more that you think of besides relationship related?
Yes, in terms of education and career, you know, all Iranian people, they want to be a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the studies.
Is that the stereotype?
Yeah.
Doctor or dentist.
Yeah.
You can be an engineer, but the coolest thing is being a doctor. Mm. Like, it is like that.
I love it.
So, yeah,
is it the highest status doctor to be a doctor.
Doctor is the highest, yeah.
Okay.
So I did study science. I had straight A in everything besides two things. That doesn't allow you to be a doctor. You have to have straight A in everything.
So you were aiming for being a doctor?
Or aiming. I was programmed to be that. I didn't even think about it. It wasn't a choice. So I couldn't go to medicine. Then I wanted to take dentistry then. That day, I met my auntie at the street, and she was a dentist, and she wasn't happy. So she took me to her clinic, and she said, "Naomi, don't do it. It's a nightmare." And she said, "You know, it's loads of Iranian people who couldn't become a doctor. They became a dentist, and they can't find job. Oh, okay. And, you know, Swedish patients, they wouldn't come to us. So just drop it. Do anything else. Do anything else. Look at these letters. They all... don't want me. They rather go to a Swedish dentist." And she was right.
Oh, really?
But that time, it was so many Iranian people that were dentists that didn't have a job and moved to England. And she moved to England, and she became so rich. So every time we talked to each other, she said, "Please, thank me, forgive me, forgive me."
But you're thankful for her steering you away from it.
Yes, yes. Because after that, many nightmares happened. One of those was that I went to become a computer science engineer. Mm-hmm. And that was a bad choice. Because I wasn't good at programming, and it wasn't anything that would suit my personality. But again, it did lead to other choices that made me the one I am today. But as you say, if I would go back, I would be more proud over the talent that I had naturally. And it was art. It was being an artist, comedy. So yeah, I would do that more firmly.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And your sliding doors, Alphonse?
I have several sliding doors, I guess. But I think one of the most significant one is when my former wife came home, or wife-to-be at that time, and told me, "Alphonse, you're going to be a dad." And I was not prepared at all. I was like, "I'm never going to have kids. I'm just going to..." I was playing a lot out music, playing the keyboards and guitar. And I was thinking about a career as a musician or something. And when she came home and she was like, "We're going to have a baby." I was 25 years old. I was like, "What?" And I was thinking, no, we can't have a baby. I can't be a dad. I'm too young, you know. I'm not responsible at all. I want to do this musician thing. I want to travel Sweden and do things. I don't want to be a dad. It's too early. But, you know, she was really saying, "No, we're going to have this baby. So whether you like it or not, we're going to have it." So I was like, okay, then we're going to do this for real. So... that changed my life completely. Completely. I that's when I applied for school, actually, and I didn't get into the teaching, the teaching school, but the engineering. So that completely changed my life, actually. So and you know, since I was a computer engineer and I started coming into, I had my first job, and I did a pretty good advancement, and it ended up with business and management a lot for me. And that was fun for me, because I got to prove myself. I thought I was, you know, pretty good on what I was doing, but I was never home. So I worked a lot. I worked so much, and I didn't spend the time with my family that I should have. So that's a big regret, actually, thinking about it now. So I was always working, you know, getting up early, going to work, traveling to Stockholm, living in Gävle. Working to late nights, coming home, and my former wife, she did everything, you know, all the groundwork and everything. She was a teacher, so she had time to do that. So, you know, we divided that. So she was home doing everything, and I was working really hard. But still, you know, I really missed out on the kids a bit.
What's your relationship with them now?
It's really good, actually. I have a really good relationship with my kids, but I should have spent more time with them when they were younger. Yeah. I really miss that part. You know, the nice part when they're little kids.
But what your wife was, sorry.
Yeah, she
your
was
wife
present.
Was at home and she...
Yeah, she wasn't at home. She was working, but, you know, living in Gävle...
You raised the kids.
I wasn't away all the time. I said hello to them occasionally.
Hello, son.
What's your real name? You're not named son, are you? Anyway, you can tell me tomorrow. I don't have time now.
That's gonna go to work.
Still call him son. I spent weeks, I was home at Saturdays and Sundays, but you know, the everyday time and spending more time every day, that's the part I missed out on for maybe 10 years or something. So that's a long time.
But
I really regret that.
What if you wouldn't be working in Stockholm and like providing the family with money and spending more time
at home
with the kids? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think.
What do you think? What do you think like would have been the difference?
I don't know.
Because I guess that the money that you earned,
yeah,
working in Stockholm provided the family,
yeah,
more than your former wife's like.
Yeah, we had a nice house and we had a summer house and we got to travel a lot and so on. But I think that is not that important. We could, you know, if you have a nice house or if you live in an apartment or whatever, it's the time you spend with the family that is really valuable and
but you did it for the family. You did it for.
Not really, actually. I think I'm kind of a racehorse myself, so I I'm having a hard time just doing, you know, stuff. If I don't put my soul into it and I do it with all my, do the best I can, I don't enjoy working. So I get energy from working a lot and being creative and, you know, trying to come up with new ideas and such. So that I think that drives the time all the time. So I spend a lot of time at work because I love what I'm doing. Mm. So I think that's a trap, actually, in some kind of way.
So if you would go back,
yeah,
and spend more time with your children,
yeah,
do you think that would change a lot for you or for them?
I don't know. It would probably change for both my Saga and Hampus and for me. I guess I would be maybe a bit more calmer, lugnare, calmer, than I am today, and probably. I mean, they. I don't know. It's hard to say what in what way that it would impact them, but I guess it would be different.
Mm. But I think that what you're describing is something that, at least nowadays, most of us think about.
Mm.
At least in countries like Sweden, that you have quite high level standards compared to other countries, and in order to getting that, you work a lot and spend less time with people you love, not only your kids, parents, cousins, everyone.
Mm.
And yeah, I think maybe I would regret that as well.
But Jonathan, you have a son, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you were staying in New Jersey or living in Sweden?
No, my son was born here. We moved here in 2013.
Yeah.
My son was born in 2014, so we basically came here to have him. You know? Mm. So
that was a choice that you made, like moving to Sweden?
We're like, we'll have when we... It's better to raise a family in Sweden, yeah. We were kind of subconsciously, but we were putting it off until, you know, because I was in the, like he was talking about the race, I was in the horse race big time in the States. And then we came here and it was like, all right, we can everything, the system is set up for you to be able to not, you don't have to have so much money. You can still have a good life in Sweden. Like the average is good here. Like it's a good life for most people.
You don't have to kill yourself.
Right, you don't have to kill yourself. Mm-hmm. You can, but you don't have to. If you want a summer house and a nice house in Gävle, I mean, you gotta.
then you have to kill yourself.
You gotta kill yourself.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
No, but yeah, my son was born here, and my daughter is a one now.
Okay,
so I have two small kids, and I really appreciate the paternity leave.
Yeah,
I don't have that in the States, so I feel like the bond moving here. That's a sliding door for me moving here, and then being able to develop that bond with my daughter that I have now. She's a year and a half almost, and. It's insane. She's it's almost cliche daddy's girl. You know what I mean? Like that they say, you're going to have a daughter and she's going to be a daddy's girl and all that stuff. And no, I really had it. You know, it really happened after, and I think it's the paternity leave because I was the one to help her go through the transition to daycare.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm the one who picks her up now. So she's just all about me. And I don't think that happens if we didn't move here because it'll be, you know, a lot more daycare and a lot less interaction with the kids.
So what were you doing in New Jersey? Like
my job?
Yeah.
I was working in logistics.
Okay.
I was like in the transportation industry. I was working for FedEx doing logistics management. Yeah.
Cool.
So it was like, but around Christmas time, you know,
yeah.
We're like, see you later, honey. You should go to Sweden because I'll see you in January. You know what I mean? It's like that. I tell her that after Thanksgiving. See you in January.
Yeah.
I was working 16, 17 hour days sometimes. So, and it was fun.
It was fun.
I had a good time, but that's another one.
That's the hard part when you like it.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
it's hard. Because you work a lot and you put in the hours and you think it's great to go to work. You have fun. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. It's developing and everything.
And you're making money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So everything is fine and dandy, but you're missing out. And it's hard to see, actually. It's really hard to spot.
I feel that. I have that feeling. I have never had it for any job.
Mm.
But I have it for my passions, like my hobbies, and it's the same that I feel like, oh my God, I can't stop it.
Yeah.
Like you feel that you miss out. Mm. If I wanted to start to paint, I can paint in so many hours that I'm not as good as my social life. I wouldn't focus at that as much. And yeah, I feel that as well. That it's hard to stop something that you like.
Yeah.
But I think one of my a sliding door for me was in 2009, because that was the first time I went to Malaysia to meet my relatives on my father's side, and because the whole family from my father's side was like a mystery for me, because I didn't know anything about them. I've spoken to my grandmother once in the cell phone, and I met my aunt like two times. She had been to Sweden when I was 10, And my dad didn't tell me that much about them either, because he didn't know them. When it was me and my father, we went to Malaysia in 2009. He hadn't been there in 15 years.
Okay.
So his relation to the family was quite sore as well. But for me, it changed my whole view of myself and my identity and the world. It was like, before I was there, I was kind of feeling like I was half. Like my identity wasn't, I wasn't fulfilled as a person.
Okay.
Because I had so many questions that had been running around like my body and my mind since I was a small child. So I guess that's maybe the most important sliding door for me. Especially during that time, I still had like dreadlocks and was a vegetarian. For them, that was, my looks were kind of extreme for them. They had never seen a person. And when we came to, it's not like a small village, but it's a small part of, it's outside of the capital, like Kuala Lumpur. They had never seen a person with like dreadlocks because people down there don't have that kind of hairstyle. Yeah. So it was like, you could see like the neighbors. So it was like, oh, who's this? Who's this? Especially like being vegetarian, because for them, like, why are you vegetarian? Why are you recent? They were asking so many questions. Yeah. We had Uncle Kit was the name. Like, he was comparing me to like the monks, because the only person that they knew was like Chinese monks.
Oh, so it was something religious. Like, yeah, you like, just don't do it for.
Whatever, like, oh yeah, you're a good person because you care about other people and animals and stuff.
You're like, no, I don't. No. I care about music. I want to smoke weed and I care about Selassie I the first.
I care about Cape Town.
Turbulence.
But it was interesting because at that point we took a trip to an island nearby that is called Penang, and it was the first time me and my dad actually spent several days in a row. I never spent a long time with my dad ever in my whole life, so that was a real breaking point. It was the first time ever that I told him that I loved him.
Oh.
And he was almost, it was like he was amazed by seeing me and hear me saying that I actually loved him.
Wow.
So I think that's one of my most important sliding doors, I guess.
Yeah, that's the defining.
Since you were like talking about parentship and stuff, it just came to my mind.
But is that something that you wish you had done like when you were younger, like earlier?
I think I wasn't at that stage in my life. I needed my dreadlocks to say that I love my father.
Dreadlocks.
I had when I was 16, 17, my best friend, she came from Ethiopia. So, and I have this tendency becoming obsessed by anything, everything. So when I was friend with her, I was very much into Eritrean, Ethiopian food, music, and everything. And I still cook Eritrean food.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Cool. But those pancakes they have, you can't, you don't, I can't.
Thin, soft, spongy. That's right.
We had them actually yesterday, but I don't cook them, I just buy them.
It's really smart.
But when you do you have any sliding doors that were traumatic in a sort that they you wish that they didn't happen?
That like coincidence. That I don't want to talk about.
That you want to talk about? Yeah. Or okay. Maybe not traumatic, but like sad sliding door.
Yeah, I mean, there's of course there's sad stuff that you. I have one that didn't happen, and I wonder what would have happened if it did.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very recently, we talked about on my podcast, I have a rocky relationship with my father. And some terrible things happened growing up that I won't get into now. But my son started, I guess they're talking about families in school, and he's starting to realize differences in people. And I'm a black man, his mother is a white woman. So he's asking me, I'm brown and this and that. And I could see he's trying to connect with this brown side.
Mm.
So he asked me about his far. He sees his mom's family all the time. He's asking me about my, and I don't have a relationship with my dad. Mm. I had purposely ended the relationship with my father on bad terms as well. And so I was just like, yeah, you know, my dad's, he's, yeah, my dad is not, I don't really talk to my dad. And he's just, and he started lying to people about his father, his grandfather. He's like, my farfar is, he got me this. And he's playing with a toy. I'm like, this is what I got for my farfar. I'm just sitting there, just heartbroken, you know. So then he asked me, if he, when is he going to meet him? And he's like, oh, kind of sad about it. I want to meet my farfar. And then I was like, we're going to go to Florida in March. We're going to go to Florida. And you're going to meet your farfar. And he's so excited. My dad, I talked to my dad. We had a two-hour conversation. Where I was just like, man. And I, and then on my pockets, I said that I wanted to confront my dad about some things in our past. And I told my brother, and this was a big thing for me. I was going to get this out the way so that we could start from scratch. I don't want to pretend with my father anymore. This is what we had done. Pretended that he's this great guy that he pretends he is. And we never called him out on it. And now I was going to call my dad out, and then we start over from scratch.
Yeah.
This was the plan. So then we went. He lived in Tampa. That's a three-and-a-half-hour drive from Miami. So I was like, we'll make a detour and go to Tampa, leave Miami, get a hotel, all of this stuff. So we did it. My son keeps asking the whole trip. He didn't give a fuck about the rest of my family. He's like, where is Farfar? You know? So we make the trip. We go see my mom in my in Maryland. My mother lives in Maryland. Then we flew down and we stopped in Tampa and then we would drive down to Miami. That was the plan. So we flew down to Tampa and then I get in town, meet my military homie. We're staying at his house. He lives in Tampa. Call my dad, or I tried to call my dad. No answer from my buddy's phone. Leave a message. I'm like, yo, when we gonna hang out? Get, the next morning, my buddy's like, hey, man, I got a text message from your dad. He said he's going to South Carolina for a surprise party.
Oh. Was that the joke? Was it true?
It's true. So I was like, what? You know? And then my son's like, you know, where's something with my farfar? So I'm getting sad.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, that was tough.
Yeah. So I wonder what would have happened if, you know, he didn't do that.
So he never got to meet. You never met up. Or?
He met. Sorry, guys.
Did he make that up?
I'm sure he made that up. My dad's he's a terrible person, but I'm sure he made the whole thing up about the surprise party. It's just a weird way to say it too.
Mm.
Yeah. Like I'm gonna say, oh shit, he's going to surprise party. It's so cool.
Yeah.
So
It would be better of him to tell the truth or tell you that I'm scared of meeting you because I'm ashamed for some reason.
But then
he'd
have to show vulnerability, and that's the honest thing in there.
But still, I love the fact that in spite of all, you went all the way. You tried to hook up with him.
Yeah.
You did everything to really, you know, call him out or whatever to get this relationship to work.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. Yeah. I mean, that's a really
that's really
thing.
Honorable.
I'm thinking of your son anyway. You're taking him, bringing him to Tampa. All the doing all the right things. I think that's really, really, really important.
I had a similar experience. I don't like my husband's brother, and I didn't want my twins to meet him. And they just kept nagging about it. Yeah, we wanna see uncle. We wanna see uncle. I didn't want them to see him, and they nagged so much that I asked my sister. You know, she's a psychologist, and she said that they have to meet him because the damage of seeing a person who's not good is less than going and just thinking about it all the time. So, I did agree for them to see him last year. And then they met him, and after they said, we don't want to meet him anymore.
I'm thinking that's what's going to happen. I want to get it out of the way. I want my son to meet my dad and realize... But this is why dad is. But I don't want to be in the way of it.
No.
I don't want him to mystify him and turn him into a hero like I did for myself all those years. I thought my dad was awesome. But
you are glad you did it.
Yeah, you did.
I'm glad I did that. I just this is a backwards sliding door. Like I wonder what would happen if we would have met him. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe even I could have gotten off my chest what I wanted, and maybe my dad would have received it, and then we could have started over. But I don't know. And but I and then I had said afterwards, I'm done with him.
Yeah.
But then my son kept asking, so
even after.
Yeah, he still.
Oh.
And I was like, I kept saying, everybody's not like your dad, you know. And then I called him like 2 weeks ago or something like that, and they talked, but I didn't even talk to him. I just and he was all charming, like it. My dad was real charming. He was charming to him, and my son loved it. So,
yeah.
So we'll see. Hopefully.
But could they Skype?
No, my dad's...
don't like to do this.
He doesn't know how, he can't figure it out. But he won't say it, so he'll just be like, no, I don't want to do that. He just can't figure it out. He's all pride.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with that. But I'm just... I know it's letting my son get disappointed one day, but it builds character.
Yeah, yeah, it's better to do it that way than have it, you know, the way that... You know, you don't tell the truth. This is the truth. It's so much better. Yeah. It's always better.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And even knowing the truth of what your grandfather is better than just going around and guessing.
All right.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Exactly.
But like when you moved to, you came to Sweden first.
Yeah.
And then you moved to England, right?
I moved to loads of places. But, you know, I came when I was 13, I came to Sweden. And then when I had the twins, we moved to Norway.
Oh, you've been living in Norway?
First, we moved to Iran. Oh. I did live there on my maternity leave.
Mm.
I lived in Iran for 1 year.
Oh, wow.
And I think the reason was that when I had the twins, it wasn't as romantic that I had it in my mind. Like, it was... I thought I had a picture that everything, when you are pregnant and you have kids, everything going to be amazing and beautiful. But right when I had them, Moshe started to research. So when he came home, he studied a lot.
Okay.
So for me, it was a period, the first year, it was like I was lonely and I couldn't do anything. It was like, it wasn't a good feeling. It was quite traumatic, I have to say. So I was desperate. I didn't know what to do. And I didn't... my maternity leave was 1.5 year because they were twins. Then I decided, let's live in Iran for 1 year and see what happens there. And there, my family that I had in Iran, my stepsisters, they did work, but they were not as busy as my family were here.
Okay.
Because here everybody was studying, everybody was working, so I received loads of help of them. So it was a very good decision. But when I came back, then we lived 1 year in Norway, and then after that we went to England. Yeah.
The way I've been working, I changed my way when I moved down here for 5 years ago. I worked a lot the first year, and then all of a sudden I felt like, you know, there's no joy in my life, no real joy, except I had a lovely wife and kids and everything, but I didn't have any fun. I wasn't playing anymore. So that was the I was started thinking, what should I do to get some more energy in my life? Do something, you know, do things differently. That's when I started, and I started with improv.
Yeah.
Improv theater.
But did you stop playing music when you became a father, like in the age of 20?
Yeah, I did. At that time, I stopped playing because when I got Hampus, my first kid, I went to school. So I studied at the same time we had kids, and we had two kids. And also my wife started studying, so we didn't have any money and I didn't have the energy. So, parents with two kids and full-time studies,
there was no time to play
music. Yeah, there was no time to play music. But I started playing again when I was like 10 years after that. So I started picking up keyboarding and actually I was out playing when Saga was born. She was only 3 months. I went on a summer tour actually. But after that I didn't play anything. But I picked it up 10 years later and now I'm playing more. But the thing I was thinking about was when you're only working and you're going home, coming home, sitting down, watching a movie, and the life is more like every day is like the other day. Nothing new happens. You don't get to meet new persons. You just work and you come home. And in a way, you stop
there's no development. You get no input. That was really suffocating me for a while.
So how did, when you started with improv, how did that like change?
Well, I'm really shy. Actually, I have a shy side. I used to be shy, but I hate doing things I'm not in control of. That I really hate that. I want to plan everything, and you know, I can work really hard, plan it, and then perform, but not on stage. Mm-hmm. So I hated that part. So that was more to challenge myself. I need to do something that gets me out, way out of my comfort zone, and that was improv. So I started taking a course at Preses with Erik and me. And that was so, you know, I was so terrified doing it. The first, you know, couple of classes they had. Because you have to do so many ridiculous things and warm-up exercises.
Act like a dog.
And you know, egg. And it's so many really stupid games. And I was too, you know, business and everything. So I needed that. So it took me like, you know, 6 months just to relax and not take myself so seriously. So
that would have happened if you haven't went to improv.
Yeah, I don't know.
Courses.
That would probably be a disaster. I don't know what would happen because I wasn't having a good time. I was a bit depressed, I guess. You know, coming home and feeling that this is nice, but it's not invigorating. It's not. I'm not getting any energy of it, and I was really not enjoying life.
But the home life or the work life?
I was missing something. You know, I didn't get any energy. Work was fine. I had fun. I had lots of interesting activities and such. But coming home was not enough, you know.
You didn't feel fulfilled.
That's right. Yeah, I was missing something.
Yeah. Because you are creative.
I am energetic and creative. So I guess I needed to express myself in a way.
Yeah.
But Jonathan, what drove you to start with like stand up?
Yeah, I was
that
wondering
must have
that.
Been like
that
a
was
break-
telepathy.
Breaking.
I was wondering that.
When we started our podcast, we had Ahmed Berhan as a guest, and because he was friends with or he was acquaintances with one of the guys from the podcast, because he used to do Thai boxing. My co-host was a boxer, so they were just talking to him and they were fascinated and wanted to hear about his process of stand up. And they saw me like looking like, wow, I was just like intrigued because I've always been into stand-up since I was a kid. I just always thought that it was a thing that I wasn't worthy of doing because seeing these people do it and then, I don't know, it was just like, that's a, and then my mom always said, it's too many comedians out of a job for you to be trying to be funny. I said that all the time as a kid. So I was like, oh, it's a loser field, or you can be really great at it. Like, it was just like that. But then I heard him talking about it, and it was like a comedian sitting there talking about the process, and it was interesting. And then they were just like, look at John, man, he's so into this. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is very. And then Ahmed was like, and they said he thinks he's funny or whatever. And then Ahmed was like, do you want to do it? And I was like, and then he was like, just do it. And he said, there's an English night at Big Ben on Thursdays. And I was like, really? There's English comedy here? He was like, yeah, man, go to Big Ben. And then he gave me Thomas's information. And he said, if you're really interested, he's like, I can get you on for your first time. See if you like it. And I did it. And now I'm hosting Big Ben.
So. Yeah, I know. But I was surprised hearing you only been doing stand up for 3 years. Yeah. I would have guessed 10 years.
Yeah,
or something. But you're really natural on stage. Yeah. So
thanks.
And that, I mean, often it takes a very long time before
ten
you get
years, yeah.
comfortable
That's what
like
I
you.
Heard,
are.
Yeah.
Thanks. I think it's because
damn you!
I really think it's because I started later, and I don't know. Yeah.
But that was a big sliding door.
Yeah,
it was so right because most people think I did stand up and then started the podcast.
Yeah, that's what
but
I thought.
No, it was the other way around. We were just having fun doing the pod, and then had a comedian on. That was
cool.
Totally random, and now I'm so glad that I found out about Big Ben and I could do English here. That was something I had toyed with the thought of doing it at some point. Because growing up, people were always like, "Oh, you should be, you're trying to be funny all the time. You should try to stand up." Yeah. And I was like, no. And then once I finally did it, man, it's on YouTube. My first one.
Really? Is it good? What's it good?
I thought I was the best person in the world. people should go and watch it and then realize that I'm 100 times better. But when I was walking off stage, you see me do a fist bump. Like Michael Jordan, like, I nailed it. I was born to do this. I was like, what the fuck? But the whole time, my voice is shaking, my mouth is dry, I don't know what to do with my hands and my face. I don't know. It's hard to watch now, but I'm glad it's out there. It makes me, it keeps me humble too.
But for how long from the day that you started until you made, because you went on touring with GMA, Catherine, and Ryan Russell, right?
Yeah. I was 2 years then.
2 years.
Right, that was last fall. Yeah.
What was that? It's that's gotta be the Americans or
the team. It was called Team America, right?
Yeah. All
right.
America.
That's gotta be a quite big step though, from like.
Oh yeah.
You're starting out and then choose to tour around in
the night.
With Yemi.
Yemi.
I thought you said Yemi Cash. Yeah, Ryan, I know. But I thought I missed out.
The first night I ever did it when I got to Big Ben. First of all, Yemi was the host at Big Ben. And I had looked at the list and I saw Stella Sikur. And I thought, I'm on. Let's go. So I had 13 people come up there to come watch.
Yeah.
And Yemi was like, dude, you're not on the list. And I was like, come on, man. I am on the list. It said, look. And then he said, did you get an email? I said, an email. I was like, I don't have an email, but I do have 13 people here that are here to see me. And what do I tell them? I'm in the line? And he was like, all right, man, you can do 5 minutes. Can you do 5 minutes? And I was like, it's my first time. Yeah, whatever you need. I'm prepared 5 minutes. Yeah. And I was kind of in the way because they had the test show for Team America. All of those people, Ryan, Yemi, David Weaver, all of them, and Kevin Lee was on it too, were all like doing their show, like trying it out at Big Ben that night. So I was just like, oh, wow, this is all American guy. I was like, one day I want to be able to be on this Team America thing. And since they have it was like a new world to me that there's English comedy in Sweden. Mm. Yeah, so.
So what happened? Did you get on the Team America?
That was just Kevin Lee had Eurovision or something like that.
Okay.
And he couldn't go. And then I hopped on and did a show.
Cool.
And it worked out. I did a show in Lund. And then when they were talking about the tour, they're like, John, you're on Team America now.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. Plus, I can host. And if they would get alternate hosting, I was another person that can host the show.
Mm.
So it was good to... It's good to be flexible like that. I'm glad I'm able to host.
Yeah.
But to me, hosting comes more natural than stand-up.
Oh, really?
Set. Okay. Yeah, I think so. I don't know, you don't have to be funny when you host.
No, maybe I should try hosting.
You mean is that emceeing?
Yeah, emceeing.
Oh, that would suit you.
Yeah.
I often think about that. Yeah.
I should try it. But what I want to do first is do a stand-up in English. That would freak me out. So maybe I should try to do that before Christmas, right?
So why you could do MC in any in Swedish, but does it have to be?
Yeah, but Swedish is easier.
Oh yeah.
So what are you aiming? What you're aiming for right now is like you're aiming for the next sliding door.
That's right. Yeah, my next sliding door is what happened.
Yeah.
Well, I was doing my first English gig at Big Ben, and know what happened?
Somebody.
Yeah. And I went off, and I never did stand up again.
That's no sliding door.
I mean, there's a reason why. There's a reason why I tried slamming doors.
You can't plan your sliding doors, but you can plan your slamming doors.
No, this is not the episode of sliding doors, it's slamming doors.
But I was surprised because I recently went to Spain, to Barcelona, and I went to like an open mic stand-up show there. And there was almost everyone that was performing were American, except for one guy that was from the UK.
Mm.
And then it was me. And one Spanish guy. But the whole audience was only tourists. So that was when I tried stand-up in English for the first time.
But you've done it a couple of times, right?
I did it twice. in Barcelona.
You done it here, right?
No, not in Sweden. Not in Sweden. Yeah.
I guess I was host when you were there.
Yeah,
Swedish. Okay.
But it was like I tried it out. If I bomb, I mean nobody's gonna never know about it. Yeah. Nobody knows me.
That's a good way to do it, man.
Yeah, I never thought about that like this. That it can be. I thought like it's scary to do like stand up in another country. But if you look at it like nobody knows you, so who cares? That could be freedom, like thinking like that.
But because it felt like was when I did stand up the first time when I was trying out in Barcelona.
Mm.
For because I was so fucking nervous.
Yeah.
But I liked the feeling. I liked the way of being that nervous again, and maybe to just totally fail.
Yeah.
Did you have to do?
Okay, I guess much better than I actually thought.
How was the expat comedy scene there? I mean, how were the comics that performed?
They were.
What was the level?
I mean, you could say you could tell like they have had their style. Was quite alike each other. Like there were a lot of this inspired by this Netflix special kind of way, like storytelling style. Nobody did like set up punchline.
So they tell like memories in 5 minutes.
Kind of like most of them like went up and was telling stories.
Like Jim Carr or
more like Louis C.K. brother, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
I guess. Yeah.
Okay. Showing their dicks.
But they had this one. They had one something that I had never seen in Sweden though. They had this guy from LA that he had been living in Barcelona for 13 years, I think.
Mm.
He was a drag queen as well.
Oh,
and did that. So he was going up on stage with like makeup and stuff and he did really well. But he had been doing stand up for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big difference from what I've seen in Sweden and in was more like a performance kind of thing.
Mm.
But he's a real good comic though.
But I'm thinking it's really hard to be funny if it's not your native language.
Yes.
I remember moving to when I lived in Salt Lake City. The thing I missed the first 6 months was the ability to be funny. It was so much harder to
the banter. Yeah.
Yeah.
It depends. Like I do speak three languages. Yeah. Then when I lived in England, I think I talked about this in another program. I felt like every day talking with English people that I could joke with them more. I was like more natural. And I heard later that maybe because we look at so many English speaking films that you do understand the humor better.
Mm.
Like, yes. I'm not that funny in any other language. I mean, just everyday talking. Mm. I'm not that funny in Farsi or Swedish. But when I am with my English friends, I'm funnier. And I do understand their... do you say humor? What do you say?
Humor.
Yeah. I do understand their humor better.
Hmm. At work, I speak Swedish.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like I stumble through whatever joke I try to make. It's It's not... And then... I almost see like... But people can tell... I feel like people can tell I'm funny. But then they like think it. They can't get past the fact that it's cute that I'm speaking Swedish, even though this is our work language.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's just such a. It would be a problem if I tried to speak Swedish, like perform in Swedish, because they're just laughing at the wrong stuff. And I want you to hear the joke, and they're just hearing me say a word in an American accent.
Yeah, the funny accent is not.
It's not the joke. Yeah, I'm not a Swedish guy doing an American accent. No. I'm an American guy speaking Swedish.
Yeah.
But in other hand, I have heard people who have this is more common in other countries. Like, it's more acceptable that you talk, for example, English with very, very heavy breathing, and people are used to it. Maybe in Sweden, the more we do it, the more people would get used to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I thought like if I thought that my Swedish was not good enough, like for 2 years ago, I thought that if somebody would tell me, go and do some stand-up comedy, I would say no, because, you know, I have breathing and it's it would disturb the
Yeah, that's a big sliding door for you.
Yeah, I mean, but
because
you know,
you told the story before that you were unsure that you could actually do.
Yeah, Swedish. Because I thought you need to speak perfect Swedish. Yeah. But then I just happened to go and see Zinat Pirzade, and she have breathing.
Okay.
And then I felt like, oh, I don't think about it. I think she's funny and she has breathing. Mm. So the more people with breathing do it, the more normal it would be. I think.
But I don't know any English speakers that perform in Swedish.
Okay, maybe they should.
That's right. Yeah, you're right.
That's a good point.
Maybe you should.
Yeah. And then
because I don't get disturbed by an accent. I don't. Not at all, actually.
No, I mean, yeah.
It could add.
An English accent.
I mean, not in a bad way, but in a good way.
I think I could. Yeah, I could do my same material too. Yeah. I won't have to change the material, just translate the material. But so much of what I do on stage is impromptu, like it's in the moment.
Yeah,
if somebody says something, I can.
Yeah.
But doing that part, I would lose that part. Yeah. And to me, that's a big part of my stage presence.
Yeah.
Is, messing with the crowd and reacting to stuff. And then if I think of something real quick, I could just pop it out.
Yeah,
but I couldn't do that. And so I would have to stick to a script, and I would
kill it.
It would like a bit. Yeah, neuter me a little bit, like dilute my act.
I was thinking about that a few days ago. Like, I thought if I would do a public snack in Farsi, I think I would be much more confident.
Mm. Okay,
I can imagine.
Yeah, and it was like if it was Iranian people. Okay, that part I think I would be stronger in Farsi.
Mm. Are there any stand-up comedians doing? Stand up in Farsi in Sweden.
There are two in America. They do in English, but they sometimes they do in Farsi for Iranian. One is Max Jobrani, and the other one I don't remember.
But in Sweden,
no.
Is it anyone
in Farsi? I know that Shimani Avarani, before she got this famous that she is now, she did stand up in Farsi. I haven't seen her, but it was more private. Parties and they said she was a genius. She was really good, but no, I have been asked to do it in Farsi, but it's so new for me that I'm not yet home with Swedish, so I can't try it under languages, but I maybe will.
Maybe you can do only crowd work then. Do only crowd work in Farsi.
No, you gotta have a payoff though. You gotta have a payoff. You gotta have at least one closing. That's how I always feel. Like I gotta give them something.
Well, they do the crowd work and everything fails. It's a quiet room. You're like, you look like someone else
who's hungry.
That was funny, huh? No.
You gotta have something.
Asking everyone, the classic one.
Yeah.
What do you work with? What
Yeah.
You two together.
So nobody has a job?
Yeah, right?
You are divorced?
They completely.
You have a room full of doctors.
Yeah.
What do you work
with? Like a doctor.
That's what you should say, though. What do you work with? Oh, I know. Doctor, dentist, doctor.
You don't need to tell me. Let me get a doctor.
Dennis, unemployed.
Yeah.
No, I met the mentalist.
Yeah.
So, Jonathan, if you would guess, like in the future, what any future sliding doors that you think might?
I don't know, man. I think something. I guess. What do you mean? Like what I hope to happen?
No. If you would guess.
At some point, I'm gonna hopefully transition away from working my day job and focus 100% on stand-up, and I wonder what it would be the catalyst to make it happen.
Mm. All right.
And not just stand-up, but entertaining. You know, I'm trying to produce things, too. Mm. So I'm wondering what's going to be the thing that pushes me, because I'm still a very structured person, and that's a big jump for somebody like me to do it. Because now I don't mind. I do a lot. Like, I edit my podcast, and I do the stand-up gigs. And then I do the family stuff, and then I have a full-time job. So at some point, I'm going to have to transition away from work. Mm. So I wonder what that door is going to be. And I'm anxious to figure it out, but I want to make it happen.
So. No, it's going to happen. Yeah. I think it's a really good thing that you're structured, because that's going to make everything happen.
Mm.
I mean, being in the comedy business and being very structured and driven, that's the, you know, you're going to make it.
Thanks.
So do you want to plug anything? Like,
yeah, I mentioned my podcast like 25 times, so the 26th time I'll say what it's called. The Power Meeting Podcast, me and my two Swedish homies talking about life. We have the Laugh House, but I don't know when this comes out.
In 4 weeks.
Okay, so never mind. We're going to probably be either in hiatus or at a new location. So,
What was the name of your podcast again?
The Power Meeting
Podcast. The Power Meeting. What is it about?
It's different things. We talk about silly stuff that happened in the world and stuff, stories from our past. It's just me and my two friends, and the listener gets to be kind of a fly on the wall hearing us talk shit, basically. And then we give music tips at the end and stuff like that. So,
cool.
Yeah, so I really, it's been fun doing that. We got a pretty good following, so hopefully your listeners would enjoy it as well.
Yeah, cool. We will tune in to that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Really appreciate you inviting me. If you won't need me back, I'll come back sometime.
Oh, ooh, great.
Wow.
That's
a good boutique.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
You run me a person. Yeah. A star. Yeah. Thank you.
We will, definitely.
Yeah, man. Yeah. If you would have got grades like this, you might be a doctor. Right now.
Okay, thank you. Right. And that's it.
That's it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.